This is the 10th of November, Friday, in Jesse Cohen's house for our second interview for the National Council of Jewish Women, Selma Rice and Howard Braun and
Jesse Cohen.
And Jesse Cohen.
Oral history to...
Oral history for the National Council of Jewish Women.
There were just a couple of questions that we missed last time. I wanted to know your mother's maiden name, and we didn't get that. Tell me how
my mother's maiden name was Rebecca Dalversky. The family had shortened that name from Dalversky to Balver. They dropped the S-K-Y. And she had brothers, and there are children, some living in Pittsburgh, by that name.
Can you give me the names of her brothers?
Yes, she had, she came from a big family. She had a lot of friends. Her brothers are all deceased now, but their names were Charles, Joseph, Jesse, Ralph, and Lewis.
So they come from a big family.
She also had sisters. Her sisters are all deceased with the exception of one. Do you want their names?
Yeah, one.
Their names were Bertha. Her married name was Bertha Harris. Betty Levine. Sally Cullis, Ethel Farkas.
How do you spell Cullis?
K-H-O-L-O-S. And Ethel, her married name was Farkas. Her original married name was March Meyer, and then she remarried Sidney Farkas. She's the only living member of my mother's family. She's a widow, and she lives here in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell us about your family before we go on? I think we have...
Well, I have 15 grandchildren. I don't know if I told
you. Well, we're going to talk about that, too, right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah, we're going to get the names of your grandchildren.
Okay.
Well, should we do the grandchildren?
No, first finish that. Okay. Any thought you had about that new business involvement you're into now?
I did describe it. Well, I got involved in it for a particular reason because I thought that, first of all, I was admired the Israeli inventor, and I thought I could do something for Israel's balance of payments. I thought it would be good if we could. I spent most of my life working for Israel, so I figured it would be good if we could do something along those lines. And at the same time, I thought that I could have the opportunity possibly to make some money out of it. I haven't made any money yet. I've invested a lot of money as we develop new product. But I think it'll be good. And Israel's economy, by the way, I've been over there, it's just booming, particularly since the peace process was instituted and the peace with the Jordan and the accommodation so far we have with the Palestinians. Their economy is really booming, and I think it's going to continue to boom. And if this peace process continues and everything comes to fruition like we all hope for, I feel very confident that Israel is going to be a real power in that part of the world. So the business is still going on. We're developing new product, and it's interesting. And we're worldwide patents on everything that we're doing. So we have a chance to maybe get my money back and make a few bucks.
Has it gone public in any way?
No, it has not gone public. One of the guys in Israel who's involved with us is Leon Reconati. That's the banking family in Israel. also the Leon's the guy who has the school at Tel Aviv University, which I happen to be on the board of American Friends of Tel Aviv, and he donated the money to create the business school at Tel Aviv University, which is, you know, is the largest university in Israel. And he's involved with us on an advisory capacity, and he's invested some money in the business.
How do you spell his last?
R-E-C-A-N-A-T-I, Recanati. That will business at this stage in time is still in development. We're making a lot of sales right now in the industry, and hopefully it's going to be okay.
What's the name of the outfit you didn't say?
UPS Technologies. Has nothing to do with UPS, but Zvika Aviv, the president of the Israeli company, I have to be president of the American company. UPS was Ultimate Production Systems.
Okay.
That's how he came up with that name. Not realizing at the time he came up with the name that it was going to be competing with a similar name for the UPS. Trucking and air service and attempting package service.
Are there any other significant industrial or business associations in Israel that you have?
No, I really don't have any other associations. I have had some in the past, but I'm
I have a question, John. Now, since Rabin has been assassinated, of course, you know the terrible problems. You know the terrible problems with the rightists. I know that the very Orthodox Jews, a lot of them are very much against this whole peace process. And I'd like to know how you feel about it and what you think is going to come of this whole business.
I think the peace process is going to continue. I think that, as they said at the funeral, it's going to be Rabin's legacy, and I think they're going to see that it comes to fruition. However, you know, I have a daughter who is a Lubavitch. Now, the Lubavitch should not be associated with some of the other Orthodox group. They live in Israel. They live on a kibbutz called Kfar Chabad. They go in the army. They do all the things that every other Israeli does. They're not Mi'asharim people. We had a lot of discussions the last few days because, as I said, my Israeli friends were visiting here about the whole thing. And I try not to get into discussion with Nancy about this because Nancy believes that Judea and Samaria were part of biblical Israel. And I think the religious people, by and large, believe that they should not give back all that land. I know that she condemned and was distraught at the assassination of the prime minister. She just thinks that it was the worst thing she could think of. A Jew murder is not on the list. So although we have that conflict, because I believe that they should have defensible borders, just as UN Resolution 242 says. And I think they will. I don't think they're going to get back every inch of the West Bank. In this last peace pact that they just signed with the Palestinians, 1999, they will be moving out of the Palestinian cities, as we all know. They will keep the IDF and will the West Bank or Judea and Samaria to protect the Israeli settlements. I think the peace is going to be a real peace, and I think it's going to come to fruition.
Good for you.
Yeah. I have to say I was disturbed yesterday because one of my friends, who is also
Lubavitch?
Lubavitch from Philly, was hollering about the fact that the Israelis are jailing rightists and they're just, you know, using them as scapegoats, etc. So,
those are items of current momentary news, sort of little bit out of the line of the general trend of our intent here. I'd like to continue on in another direction, if you don't mind. One, you've told us a bit about your furniture business and association. Are there other businesses in the Western Pennsylvania area that you had an involvement with?
Not really. I had involvement with G.B. Glasser Brothers, the G.B. department store, which was a family enterprise. I'm not in any other business in Pennsylvania except we own some real estate which we manage and develop.
Okay. I needed to know that because some people have strings all over the place. Next question. Have you ever had any involvement with or interest in any of the political figures in the area? And do you have any comments about any of them? You pick them out, who you might want to say anything about.
I don't know about me in the area. I'm very involved with politics. But not local politics, per se.
No, I want local.
Well, Pennsylvania politics.
Yes.
Well, I'm one of the guys that helped to get our inspector reelected.
Mm-hmm.
I worked like the devil for him for fundraising. And raising him money in the last senatorial election because I felt that it was important as a Jew that we keep him in the Congress and the Senate because he's been so great on Israel.
Are you one of these scarce Republicans like I am too?
I don't know what I am. I'm a registered Republican. My folks were registered Republicans. I just had a fundraiser for Jay Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
Who happens to be maybe the most vocal of all the senators on the foreign aid
mm-hmm.
and the support of Israel. I had him here to speak at an APEC meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I had a fundraiser for him while he was in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm involved with him. We had a fundraiser recently for Carl Levin, who is the senator from Michigan, another Jew,
mm-hmm.
who's a wonderful guy, who happens to be a cousin of my sister's husband, my brother-in-law, who happens to be a right-wing Republican, and probably, I don't even know if he votes for Carl, but he lives in Michigan with my sister. My sister votes for Carl.
Mm-hmm.
I go way back with senators and people like that here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you remember.
Jim Duff, when he was here, and Harris Wafford, who was a Democrat, who I supported vociferously because he was such a wonderful guy and a gentleman and a great friend of Israel. So I'm in that area. I'm involved very much because I've been the chair for APEC here in Pittsburgh for over 25 years.
That was going to be my next question. What do you see for APEC in the future?
I happen to think that we have to have a strong lobby, and we are the Jewish lobby, APEC in Washington. And Senator Jay Rockefeller said at the APEC meeting, he said that we, with all these new young Turks, newly elected congressmen, he says the ones that are voting against foreign aid, he says the reason they're voting against foreign aid is because they're ignorant. They don't realize that such a big percentage of this foreign aid comes back to the United States in form of purchases, particularly from Israel, and from Egypt, I guess. The two countries that get the lion's share of the foreign aid are Egypt and Israel. But I am a very, very strong believer in the support of APEC because we're always going to have to lobby these congressmen and these senators. We've got to teach them, make them understand why foreign aid is... I can give you a case in point on that. Why foreign aid is good, important to the United States. Israel's the only democracy in that part of the world, the only guy we can trust. We still are in a world which is in turmoil over in the Middle East. We got Iraq and Libya and Iran. So the United States has to support Israel. We've got to make sure our congressmen and senators understand it and know who better to do it than APEC, who are very well equipped to do it.
Would you please say what APEC, the words for APEC.
American Israel Public Affairs Committee. It is not a PAC. It's a lobby. It's the Jewish lobby.
In APEC had a certain relationship to the American Jewish community. Largely, it was basically supported almost by everybody. Currently, and this was really the point of my question, projecting toward the future, not the past status, in view of the what apparently is a dichotomy, a growing one in the American Jewish scene, how can that be done now? You have a major faction that will be advocating positions differently than the so-called APEC position might be.
APEC doesn't advocate positions per se.
They support legislation.
They support what APEC advocates is a strong U.S.-Israel relationship.
Go ahead.
And that's our whole purpose in life. And we do it, and we do the things that we are asked to do by the American Jews and by the government of Israel.
And you know what Rabin once a year ago said to APEC?
Yeah, I know what he said a year ago, and he apologized for that at a later date. APEC does not take positions. We're not going to get involved in Israeli politics. We're not for Likud, and we're not for Labor. We're for U.S.-Israel relationships.
You see it,
and I happen to see it. You know, we worked very hard to raise $750 million, $800 million in the United States for UJA and for Israel through the Federation and the UJA movement. We have for years now been getting in excess of $3 billion a year through APEC. And our total budget's maybe $9-10 million. And I think that's a pretty good return on investment if we can continue to get that $3+ billion in foreign aid. And I don't think foreign aid will continue. It's going to be cut back and back and back. Mm-hmm. But as long as we continue to lobby those congressmen, as long as Jews remain active in politics, as long as Jews keep vocal in politics.
And remain major donors.
Well, I think that's an important part. They remain donors. They don't have to be so major. You know, we're not talking about the guys, the PACs that come up with a big money. But as long as Jews are vocal and donors, I think that we're a very important vote in this country, and we can influence our politicians. And that's what APEC's all about. They're grassroots. They're all over the country. You take Joe Rock, sorry. One of the best supporters. You know how many Jews are in West Virginia? His constituency of Jews amounts to 1,200 total in the state of West Virginia. And besides that, West Virginia has the largest Christian coalition percentage in the United States, and he stands up and fights for foreign aid. Now, foreign aid to the people of West Virginia is as far afield as you can get, and yet he supports it, fights for it, and he says that one of the reasons he's done it is APEC is just haven't brainwashed me. They've proved to me how important it is. So I'm a very, very firm believer in it. I've been working for it very hard. I've been on APEC. I'm on the APEC Executive Committee.
That's why I tried to provoke you.
I'm on the APEC. Listen, we've had wonderful meetings with wonderful people. APEC conference last year was just historic. It had President Clinton, Yitzhak Rabin, Prime Minister of Israel, Bob Dole, the Majority Leader, Newt Gingrich, the Minority Leader. All of these people spoke to our conference.
Same people who talked to the AJC convention.
Correct. But not quite as prestigious as the AJC convention.
Mm.
Didn't have the President of the United States, the Prime Minister, on the same platform with the Speaker and the Majority Leader and the Minority Leader.
Are you an AJC member?
Yes.
What other Jewish organizations?
Just about all.
Just about all. Any comment about any of them? Well, how about the AJC?
I think that every one of them have their own particular purpose. American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress, the ADL, these are all defense organizations,
yes.
So local defense organizations, and they all do a good job. They all have a job to do, and they all perform their job. Thank God, we live in a country like the United States of America where their job is not as difficult as it might be someplace else, but what they do is very important. I agree with all their purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, changes of direction once again. I'd like you to talk about Rosh Hashanah for a little while. The rabbis you've seen there, any feelings that you might have?
Roshon Temple has been there for a long, long time. It's one time was the largest Reformed congregation in the United States. Solomon B. Freoff was a scholar.
Yeah, but how is it that all your kids are Lubavitch? I mean, what's been left?
Not all my kids.
I'm generalizing. We all seem to feel that there's been something that could have been more. I'd like you to talk about that.
I don't want to be critical of Lord of Shaw Temple. If I were just coming to Pittsburgh today, I would not be joining Lord of Shaw Temple, because I don't think Lord of Shaw Temple is doing a better job today than it did in the past. For example, when my son Tim was ready to become bar mitzvah, Solomon B. Freoff did not believe in bar mitzvahs. We had to join Tree of Life so that he could be bar mitzvahed like every Jewish young man should be. So we had to join a second congregation in order to get that congregation. When Dr. Freoff was a scholar. I think Dr. Freoff was a scholar, a lecturer, and a brilliant man. I don't think Dr. Freoff was a great religious leader, as far as I was concerned. Not inspired by Dr. Freoff's religion. I was inspired very much by his brilliance, his book reviews, those sort of things. But my kids didn't get anything out of Rhoda Shaw, and they all left Rhoda Shaw. So consequently, I may be unique. I may not be in the mainstream of that. But I do see Rhoda Shaw's membership diminishing. It's dropped a great deal from its peak. There are new congregations, of course, in the city, and then that contributes to some of it. And there's new Reformed congregations. But that's my feeling.
Trying to provoke you to speculate about the basis of the source of the difficulty of the religious impulse present in the Reformed movement. Why? Where is it?
I think that Dr. Jacob, Walter Jacob, has taken the Reform movement and moved it again the other way, the other opposite way about where Dr. Freoff is moving Rhoda Shaw. He now has bar mitzvah.
Is that enough?
Well, I think that it's better. It's better than it was. I happen to think that that the Rhoda Shaw Temple today is probably teaching their kids more Judaism. I don't think there'll be a big defection of kids today as there was when my kids were that age under Dr. Freoff's regime. I think they've made strides in the right direction, and hopefully it's going to become more that way. Let me tell you something about how I feel. Not only because my daughter's was long before my daughter was a Lubavitch. I remember this had to be 1969, 1970. Herman Feinberg stood up at a board meeting of the Federation and asked for funding for Hillel Academy, the day schools. In those days, there were two day schools in Pittsburgh, Hillel and the Yeshiva. And he was getting all kinds of flack. Our board at that time was made up of mostly secular Jews who were not religious Jews. They were around the congregations, and nobody supported Herman. And I got up. I was campaign chairman that year, so I had a lot to say. I was raising the money. And I said, look, my children will never use the day school. Little did I know that I now have 7 grandchildren that are 10 grandchildren in day school, 7 here in Pittsburgh. I said, my kids will never use it. But if we're going to have continuity of Judaism, we've got to support the Orthodox day schools so that these kids can become rabbis, and Judaism is not going to die if we do that. And I strongly believed that then, and I believe it today. That's why, I took the yeshiva, I don't know how many years ago this was, when they were really broke. And Rabbi Poker came to me and said, how can we raise this money? We're having difficulty paying our teachers. We take every student, whether he can afford to come here or not afford it. Most of these families can't afford it. And he, I don't know if you knew Rabbi Poker or what, he was a very special man. And started that yeshiva 48 years ago in Pittsburgh. And I said, well, how much money do you need, Rabbi? He said, I think we need about $500,000 to get out of debt. I said, okay, I'll do it for you. He said, well, you do what? I said, I'm going to have a campaign for you. And everybody thought I was nuts. All my contemporaries in the community thought I was crazy. And I did it. I called a meeting at Concordia Club. I'll never forget this. And I had called one of Rabbi Posner's sons. He has a bunch of sons who are all rabbis. Probably one from, I believe, Birmingham, Alabama, Nashville, Tennessee, to be a speaker. And I had pre-solicited all these people, and I was asking, I said, I'm going to give $25,000. I'm going to ask you to give $25,000. And I had a whole bunch of shows lined up. That we came out of that meeting with half of the campaign, or over half of the campaign. Make a long story short, we concluded that campaign. I raised a half of my, no, every, all my friends in the, I was, I don't think Nancy was even, yes, I guess maybe she was the Lubavitch by then. But I raised that money because I know how important it is for these kind of schools to exist. So you're talking about go to show on vis-a-vis the yeshiva. I mean, it's a far field, but that's why I believe in the yeshiva.
It's not far afield. That's just what I wanted you to get to. You've given the reason. That is, you see the continuity of Judaism and the teaching of spiritual Judaism there. Why don't we have continuity and spiritual Judaism in the Reform? Isn't that an equal Judaism?
Well, I think it is. I think it is. And I think it's both that they're missing, and they could do it. They could do it. Now, I'm
asking you to struggle with the thought.
Yeah, there's no reason that we can't have that out of the Reform movement. There's no reason why we can't have it. It's interesting that I know, you know, mixed marriages here in this country, it's incredible how many there are. I did a paper at the Council of Jewish Federation and Welfare Funds one. I made a speech, and I did a paper and did a lot of research on it. And I was astounded what's going on. And it's interesting, the statistic that you find out. Even if the mother is Jewish and the father is Gentile, their children are obviously Jews as we know them. But most of those kids are not raised really Jewish. I mean, they're perfunctory Jews, but they're not active Jews. So we have this huge problem, and most of those, a big percentage of those kids that are in mixed marriages, and particularly in Pittsburgh, the ones that I know, came out of Rosh Hashanah. I'm fortunate. My kids are all married to Jews, and I don't think they'd ever married anybody else, but I'm not so sure that's because... Are we through? I'm not so sure that's because of the Shiva or Rosh Hashanah or anything else. I always attribute a lot of that to my involvement with Israel. I think that, you know, the two great episodes in this, in our lifetime.
And your good mother?
And my mother, absolutely. But the two great events in our lifetime was the creation of the State of Israel, of course, the Six-Day War, made more Jews Jewish than anything else, including religion of all kinds. And the Yom Kippur War, and the other thing that made people Jewish is these religious Jews who go on to become rabbis and teach and lecture, and there are classes going on here in Pittsburgh today, you know, for young adults. I'm sure you're aware of it. This Florence Meltzer class that she is a friend of mine, Gordy Zaks from Columbus, that's his mother. Who's funded these things all over the United States and are teaching young adults Yiddishkeit, Judaism of all sorts. My daughter Kathy, my non-religious daughter, who goes to the Tree of Life, She and her husband go to these classes. I would never dreamt that 10 years ago that Kathy one time was an agnostic. And I would never dreamt it. And she came out of Rosh Sholem and moved to Tree of Life. But she goes to these adult education classes, and those things were a result of Jews like Ron Barkin up there at he's a brilliant guy, in my opinion, at Tree of Life, Birkin, rabbi, who's teaching these classes. And Kathy, who happened to be a very bright girl, went to good schools, and she's a professional. She works for Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers' neighborhood. She just says that Ron Birkin, rabbi.
Birkin. He's mine, too.
He is just a phenomenal guy, and we're fortunate to have him in Pittsburgh because he's doing the things you have to do if we're going to continue Judaism. So I feel strongly in those areas, even though I am a very unreligious Jew, and I'm not proud of that fact. I'm very sometimes.
I don't think you're such an unreligious Jew.
But I'm not proud of the fact that I'm not a well-educated Jew. That's something that.
That's a different point, you know. In Judaism, we've never had a catechism we had to subscribe to.
Right.
You really have lived a Jewish life.
Well, I can tell you an interesting story about that. Rabbi Posner used to come to my office because he was always short.